are listening to Teacher Talk It, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide. www.teachertalkit.co.uk. Like, subscribe and follow to stay in the know.
But essentially, it was half a grade point was the difference between the digitally excluded and those who weren't, which is the difference between, a, say, a B and a B minus.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Talkit, interview Ben Mansell, UK country manager of wireless connectivity provider Kajeet. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are Kajeet's white paper, The Impact of Digital Exclusion on Children's Education, the findings that 9% of households aren't digitally connected in the UK, and how Kajeet supports schools and households with connectivity devices such as the Smart Spot.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Talk, the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Ben Mansell. Ben is the UK country manager for Kajeet, and today we're going to discuss the impact of digital exclusion on school children. Ben, good afternoon, how are you?
Ross, I'm very well, thank you. Good afternoon.
Thank you for joining me, Ben. Let's go straight to the top. Kajeet's published a white paper looking at the research on digital exclusion and the impact, particularly the pandemic, has on our young people. Could you give us a quick synopsis of what you've found?
Well, yes. Digital exclusion is new to the UK. I guess prior to the pandemic, the use of digital tools was not predominant within the UK education system. And so the whole issue of digital exclusion didn't really exist. And even now is very new. But as you would imagine, there is a huge risk of us as a UK education system falling into two tiers for those who have the use of digital tools and those who don't. And as you can imagine, the impact of not having the same tools as your peers is going to be detrimental to your outcome of your education.
Of course. Now, some listeners might not be obviously based in the UK, but for people in the UK, they may also not be aware that 9% of our households aren't connected. What can you tell us about that fact?
Prior to the pandemic, I think, like most utilities, connectivity is thought of as ubiquitous, such as water and electricity. We just assume that every home has got it now. For those of us that do, we don't think about it. It powers an awful lot of our lives. It powers all our devices, our TVs, our music systems. So we can't imagine a life without it. But that's not the case for a large, as you said, 9% of the population. And those numbers are sort of come from Ofcom, so they're not wholly accurate. Some are larger, some are smaller. But if you imagine your life without digital connectivity, without access to the internet, I think how detrimental that would be. It's quite staggering. A question there of what does connectivity mean and in what context are we using that? So we're really talking about people who have sustainable and reliable broadband connectivity to their homes.
Sure.
This isn't a little bit of data left on somebody's phone that you can perhaps tether a device to for a short period of time while they're in the vicinity. And so there's some questions really about what this means, because it's so new to everybody.
Of course. So we'll return to the research in a moment. So for regular listeners, you'll know, well, you may not know, Ben, but I like to just unpick the background, you know, your own life in education, your work today, etc. But can I start off with that awkward question? Could you describe your 16-year-old self? What were you like at school?
I was unremarkable, I think I would describe my educational career. I was very anxious to get out into the big wide world. So now I have two children. I have a 7-year-old and an 11-year-old. So I focus all my activity on their education and trying to ensure they perhaps don't make some of the mistakes that I made.
Sure. And what happened after your school life? You know, did that college stage happen, or did you get straight into work?
No, I got straight into work. I was anxious to get into the business world. And then I spent a lot of my career dealing with mobility. So we're dealing with technology, but really at the forefront of mobility. So this is when people, you know, who were lucky enough to have computers, and not many people had computers when I started out. They were big clunky things that sat on desks with CRT that took up half the room. So I was involved with some of the early companies that were taking that content and putting it on mobile devices. So it's been a really interesting journey seeing, of course, you know, mobility sort of drives our lives now. Most of the apps on our phone, you know, if we talked about 10 years ago and said that you'd have a TV on your phone, a radio on your phone, you'd do your shopping on your phone, you'd have a video.
Yeah, absolutely everything.
Yeah, everything. You'd have thought we were completely mad, but it's it's come to fruition.
So I know your role in Kajiit's relatively new, but what was your working life like prior to the pandemic? I assume, like all of us, you're out on the road, you know, visiting locations, etc., or not?
Yeah, out on office space, but out meeting clients, very social, very interactive. And again, it comes to show how much we rely on digital tools when we've all been hunkered down. You know, how many Zoom calls are we doing a day? And of course, they come with pros and cons. If I was going to see clients every day, I might get to see two, where I can have five or six meetings in a day using Zoom.
But sure, just and a podcast here as well. So, tell me about your work at Kajiit. You know, what does it involve? How are you supporting schools in general? You know, children, households, etc. What does it look like?
So we're starting off by talking to schools, and to a certain degree, trying helping them understand this whole piece about digital inequality. In the first lockdown, there was a major issue about devices, laptops, Chromebooks, and understanding that a lot of students didn't have access to those, and the DfE and other organisations were prominent in getting those distributed. And then when the second lockdown came, it was then really uncovered. The connectivity piece was then uncovered more fully, more roundly understood that it's great giving these kids a laptop, but if they can't connect to the internet, then it's useless. We're now talking to schools and trying to get them to understand or help them understand what their digital estate looks like, how that they can measure this, because there's a certain stigma attached to not having connectivity. No one wants to brag about that. And there's also this question about what is connectivity, and it's ensuring that people ask the right questions of their pupils and trying to find that information up in advance rather than them finding out because they haven't been completing their coursework or they haven't been able to participate in lessons or homework.
So can I just ask, in your experiences of, you know, with Kajiit working with schools, what's the kind of general consensus that you're gathering in terms of schools having a good IT infrastructure or general connectivity? What's the state of the nation from your perspective?
It's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. So it runs the whole gambit. So that we talk to schools who are saying, well, you know, now pupils are back like we did before. And you could put an argument forward that there's nothing wrong with that. And then there are other schools that are looking at absolutely utilizing all the technology they can to start to deliver learning. Because if we take a step back and look at this before the pandemic, the use of digital tools with learning were very limited for most schools. And of course, that was accelerated massively by the necessity of the pandemic and the lockdown. And so, to an effect, the genie has been released from the bottle. So it's, where is this going to go now? And in our daily lives, technology is used by virtually every organization we interact with. You know, if you think about it, supermarkets, online shops, leisure facilities, any retail outlet, they're all using tools, digital tools, data, they're collecting information, they're using that to advance their customer experience and, of course, their output, and if be that profitability or however they're being measured. Whereas within education, we're at the very start of this revolution.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're quite interested in the future of what it might look like, so I'll be keen to unpick your thoughts on that. But could I just ask for maybe a definition, just for clarity? What do we mean by digital exclusion?
What we mean by digital exclusion is students not having the tools to participate along with their peers, quite simply. And that really a laptop or some sort of device and access to the internet. And of course, mm-hmm. the first piece of that is very easy to identify. It's a physical object that you have in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
The second piece is not so easy.
I was going to add, so where does the line divide between home and school? You know, schools can offer maybe a device in the classroom. You know, parents sending their children to school equipped, pencil case, uniform. I know many schools insist that some students come to school with an iPad today. So what are your thoughts on, you know, the IT provision requirements? Where do the obligations rest with, you know, school, home, etc.? It's a tricky one.
It is. And I think you have to actually look at this slightly differently and look at what is the outcome that you want and then work backwards from there. So rather than say, you know, here's the technology, here's the equipment, here's the programs, let's go and build something. It's what's the outcomes that we want? What are the possibilities that we can achieve? And then work back from there. So a lot of schools are looking at now one-to-one device ratio.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting about the ownership. Some schools are owning those devices, but then giving them to the students for the duration. Others are doing a sort of student buy or parent mm-hmm. buy-in option. So it's horses for courses, I suppose, with the schools.
Yeah, so that's the device. So if the school provides the device, we then got the connectivity issue at home. I may or may not be able to afford super fast broadband. It has a smart device. I'm lucky enough to have one here in my space. It's a neat little device. Could you maybe, as one solution, describe to listeners how that could be a solution for home or for schools?
Yeah, so I think the second point, the next point is that students don't necessarily always go home. They might go to a childminder, an after-school club, mm-hmm. grandparents perhaps who don't have connectivity. And so, you know, a smart spot device can travel with the student. Khajiit in the US are very prominent with school buses. I've seen the take up of devices. Most students now have a laptop type device, but on a school bus, none of them really have any connectivity. So if their journey time is 45 minutes, they can utilize that by doing work.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, in the UK, we don't have the same school bus system as they have in the US.
No.
So a smart spot primarily can travel with that student wherever they are, and they can use it wherever they are. So that's one major advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you can go to any retailer and buy a smart spot and a SIM card. Within school, obviously, there's a firewall. There's a very strict filtering system. Within the pandemic, when the DfEs first sent out dongles, they sent them out unprotected. And when I was talking to the DfE, they understood that there was, you know, a huge risk with doing that, but you know they were in the middle of a storm, and they had to provide something quickly. So, mm-hmm. and then retrospectively, they added some other solutions to try and protect those.
Mm-hmm.
So with Khajiit, we have a smart spot, which has a SIM card in it, which gives you the connectivity. But we have some very clever technology which diverts all the data traffic through our own private network into the Khajiit servers, where all the filtering and all the clever parts of the solution happen.
So in terms of a safeguarding perspective, all the data is encrypted, et cetera, et cetera.
It's all absolutely secure. So there's no risk to the school's infrastructure, and there is absolutely no risk of the students being able to stray into content or activities mm-hmm. that they shouldn't be. And you know, I think that's something that will come to the fore in some point in the future when there's an impact on students doing things using school or government devices that are problematic.
Now, picking up on that point, you're quite interested in the future of all this. So can I get some of your insights and perhaps recommendations? Where do you see all this going?
Well, I think there's a phrase that says, you know, technology always under-delivers in the short term and over-delivers in the long term. And I think if we think back to any sort of technology, I remember conversations with people saying to me, you know, can you believe that Amazon is worth more than Marks and Spencer's, you know, as a business? That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And of course, now they're one of the most expensive or valuable companies on the planet.
Yeah, they are.
Take a step back and try not to think in the short term. Try not to think of perhaps using Zoom to deliver a lesson to students who are isolated, and start trying to look at the possibilities of, you know, what people use this in the commercial world and how can that be utilized for education. And I'm talking sort of very wide sphere here. So I'm talking about perhaps the introduction of AI and machine learning, so that machines and the infrastructure can understand where students are based on the answers to questions. And then the next question will come down to fill those gaps and focus that attention. That doesn't by any way reduce the impact that the teachers will have. You know, they're forever will be the most important part of the process. As an ex-teacher myself, for three horrendous months last year, we have nothing but unbelievable gratitude and a new understanding of.
So, on that point, how was homeschooling for you?
So my 11-year-old, I guess I have my children was probably on different ends of the learning spectrum. So my 11-year-old was very self-sufficient and very easy to manage. In the end, we had to bribe my son with throwing footballs at him for every question he agreed to answer. But it is extraordinary that we thought that it would be just as simple as, you know, you put two beans or four beans on the table and you say divide it in half so the appreciation of teachers is, I think, from everybody has gone up dramatically.
Amen to that. They're still doing it today. So homeschooling was an interesting lesson for many of us, wasn't it? So can I return to the white paper, Ben? Could you pick out some kind of key statistics or recommendations, and we'll also reference to our listeners where they can read the report. But what's the kind of, you know, we know the purpose to highlight digital exclusion. What we know that 9% of households aren't connected, digital exclusion, etc. What were the emerging recommendations from Khajiit?
It's really about understanding your digital landscape and asking the right questions and trying to take the stigma away from this issue and making people comfortable to come forward and say, yes, look, this is a problem I have. I only have connectivity when my mother's at home because I use her phone, but there's not always data. And if you're planning to use digital tools or the increasing use of digital tools, then you need a stable and consistent and safe connectivity method to deliver those. And of course, unfortunately, we're talking about the lower socioeconomic groups. And interesting enough, today you'd have seen the BBC had a front of their website was a big issue about this on working class white children.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Graphic here, and so you know we know that the lower socioeconomic groups don't perform as well as anyway. So further disadvantaging them with lack of connectivity is going to make this, you know, it's going to exacerbate this whole situation.
Sure. So, and I think, you know, if we, you know, as we, there's the demand to stay online to complete homework. If parents at home can get that super fast broadband, provide an iPad and a laptop, et cetera, we know that those disadvantaged students are going to be further left behind. Has Khajiit proposed any practical recommendations for government or for schools?
So we are in contact with the DfE. And we are writing to Gavin Williamson to offer support in the US. My colleagues are very prominent on Capitol Hill lobbying. Mm-hmm. There was the Biden administration have just passed a load of acts delivering billions and billions of dollars into the education system. They see EdTech as a way of accelerating learning and bridging the gap that was lost during lockdown. And so a lot of the funding that they are proposing is going straight into that. And actually, there's as I understand it, there's a chunk of that has been cut out solely for connectivity to try and bridge that digital divide in the US. You know, in the UK, it's not just for I don't see it anyway, just for homework or coursework or for lessons. And again, I think we just need to think about how often do we reference Google? How often do we pick something? You know, we have a question that we can't
pick up
answer.
Our phone, yeah.
We just go online to check that.
And what would be your recommendations for all of us, I suppose, to tackle stigma, you know, sweeping stereotypes, generalizing, whether it's from our friends, ourselves as educators, or the general. What things can we all do to help bust a few myths or encourage digital connection?
Yeah, I think first of all is having an understanding of the problem. And I think we all live in similar bubbles. You know, amongst our friends, we don't know anybody who does, apart from because of a rural location or you know, lack of access, not for lack of affordability. And then really understanding the benefits that can bring. Obviously, the better educated the society, the more they're going to be able to contribute to the economy as they go through. You know, as I go through education and into the workplace. And, you know, every economy should want a better educated workforce coming into it. And so it's really
absolutely. So just for listeners, the paper title, Ben, The Impact of Digital Exclusion in Children's Education, published this year on the Khajiit website. Could you remind listeners of the Khajiit website address?
Yeah, it's Khajiit, Khajiit.co.uk.
Okay, nice and easy. So we'll get that reference online and stuff. So Ben, just to kind of wrap things up, part of our conversation, I'm sure you're old enough to remember Timmy Mallet, and you know where I bounce a few questions and no pause and hesitation, those types of things. I'm just going to kind of summarise our conversation and have a bit of fun just to kind of wrap things up. But I'll start.
Sorry, Ross.
Yeah, of course.
I should probably give the headline from the white paper.
Yeah, please do.
Which was that, although difficult to measure, and I think there's going to be a lot more activity around this and a lot more academic research around this, but essentially it was half a grade point was the difference between the digitally excluded and those who weren't, which is the difference between, say, a B and a B minus.
Yeah, and you know, so that in new money, we're looking at grades, you know, 8-7 territory, I suppose, the new GCSE grades. And I was also interested in the report, when you dig into some of your references, there was I'm looking at here on my screen, a map of the UK and kind of connection spots or not so. And I was quite surprised, being a Londoner myself, that, you know, I have students my whole career, very much London is on the heat kind of the heat map in terms of not having all their children connected at home. Any other surprises that kind of maybe shocked you?
No, I mean, just the amount, really. It's like I said, it's a utility that we all take for granted, and of course, you know, it's a bit like electricity. If you have it on a meter and you have a full account, then it's a lot less expensive than if you pay for it with a, you know, with a card or in intermittent payments. And it's the same.
Funny you mentioned that, because I've just moved into a new home and there was a gas card, and every week I was topping it up until I've managed to get it changed. But yeah, we do take these things for granted. And there you go, 9% of the UK still not connected. So thank you, Ben. Let's just pose a few questions your way. Can I just ask you what's on your table in general today in terms of your own workload, your own to-do lists?
Oh, yeah, a couple of more meetings, a report to fill in.
Okay. What book are you reading for fun?
I'm reading a book called Humankind by, I've got to look up his name actually. It's a Dutch guy, but Ruter Bergman. It's a fascinating book. It's all about the goodness of people. Because if you read the news, you'll be led to believe that the world is just about to
get... Yeah, you certainly would. News, though, there you go. What do you do? You know, how have you looked after yourself during the pandemic?
So I guess I now live vicariously through my children, so certainly my son. So it's lots of football and rugby.
Excellent. What was your favourite subject at school?
History.
And top tip for parents that might have to homeschool again in the future?
Patience, I think. Patience and probably our teachers for advice, which was what we didn't do first time around.
What's the device that you cannot live without in terms of being connected? Is it a mobile phone or something
else?
Yeah,
I'm afraid it's probably my iPhone.
Okay, can I ask you to share your first computer? Was it ZX81 or an Amstrad? What was it?
It was a BBC, BBC computer.
BBC. Very nice. I'm assuming you're doing your dream job, but what's that wacky career that you never kind of pursued?
I'd quite like to be, well, two things really. I think one of them would be an author. I'd quite like to be an author. And the other one I think would be bizarrely working with children, probably with disabled children, I think.
Okay, fantastic.
An awful lot of satisfaction.
Well, it's never too late. What advice would you give to your 16-year-old self?
Oh, study harder. Go to university.
Okay. Where can listeners find out more about Khajiit? You know, we've mentioned khajiit.co.uk. The report name, general connection with the company online. Any kind of hyperlinks?
Yeah, we're on LinkedIn and Twitter.
Yeah, well, we'll stick them in for you. No problem. I'm putting you on the spot. Here's an interesting question. Who would you recommend I interview next and why? Anyone in particular?
Well, suggest you interview someone around artificial intelligence and how that can be whatever industry they work in to education, because I really do believe that this revolution has literally just started.
On that point, we have done quite a bit of work with AI already, but we're always looking for new voices and new opportunities. So I'll have a little think about that. Final question, Ben. What would you hope to be on your What would you hope to be your legacy?
He made a difference, I think.
Excellent. So there you go, folks. Ben Mansell, UK Project Manager at Khajiit. Ben, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ross.
Keep up the good work. And it's been lovely to talk to you about all your insights about technology, your homeschooling life as a parent, and your potential future career. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.